This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You know, I was thinking about Shedeur Sanders in the fall, in the draft. And it feels like there is reason to believe that it was a completely botched pre-draft process. The crazy thing about it is the easiest part is the pre-draft interviews. You start thinking about, you know, all the questions you're going to get asked.
Mm-hmm.
You know you're supposed to say, I would bleed out if it helped my team win.
Right.
You know you're supposed to say, nobody works harder than me. You know, you actually probably know the questions that are going to be asked of you because just about everybody posts online interviews now of what the pre-draft questions are like.
Like, didn't Ahmad Hassan and the Detroit Lions draft pick didn't say he'd die for Dan Campbell?
Yes. You know exactly what teams emphasize. You can see their interviews from the past. You can ask previous people who interviewed with teams, what did they ask you? The answers are out there. And all you have to do is regurgitate the same thing that everybody else says. That's the easiest part of the pre-draft process. And if Shedeur, if all these reports are true, and he botched all of that, there's like no excuse. It's unbelievable. Your agent should set you up. Okay, this head coach is going to ask you this. That head coach is going to ask you this. Be ready. Here's what you want to say.
Do you know who Shedeur Sanders' agent is?
It's his dad, isn't it?
Well, according to a quick Google search, says Shedeur Sanders does not currently have a traditional agent. He, along with his brother Shiloh, opted to represent themselves in negotiations with NFL teams. Their father, Dion, also provided guidance. And then it came out that Shiloh has since hired Drew Rosenhaus to be his agent. But if Shedeur's agent was just his dad,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you're not doing yourself favors there. I love Deion Sanders. I think Deion's a fascinating person. I root for him in the coaching ranks. I think what he did at Colorado is incredible to change over the entire roster from one day to the next and you know, be competitive within 2 years, win 9 games, whatever they won last year, is fantastic. But I'd really like to know what he was telling his son prior to the draft. And if you're not getting help from actual agents that are in the game right now, that's a huge misstep. If you're just, you know, blind leading the blind at this point. And it clearly cost him dearly in terms of his draft and where he was selected.
I think it's the only thing I could do. I don't think I could run the 40. I mean, I could run 40 yards, but I'd be embarrassing.
Right.
I don't, my shoulder, I don't think I could bench press anymore. You know, I can't do any. I could do the interview process.
Yeah, you can just help somebody prepare for the interview.
You give me the answers, I'll give them to you. Like, you tell me what to say, I'll say it.
It's funny because Shedeur's dad, Dion, obviously was a guy who was super flashy, and maybe football wasn't the one thing in his life when he was drafted, right? But the talent on tape was so damn impressive, you couldn't pass on Dion. The tape on Shedeur wasn't as impressive, clearly. And so you got to rely on letting people know you love football and you want to play. And then on top of that, you could take a risk on a guy like a cornerback, okay, or mm-hmm. a receiver, or a linebacker. When you play quarterback, there is a different standard. And how you're supposed to be the franchise, the face of the franchise. And then you got to lead a locker room. And so I think there's different levels to the position you play. Like at quarterback, if he bombed these interviews, you're playing quarterback, man. You're supposed to be the captain. You're supposed to be the leader. It's different when you're taking a quote-unquote chance on a different position.
And I don't want to pile on and take shots at Dion because, again, I like Dion a lot. But if you go back to when Dion was drafted, Dion famously publicly stated that he ain't playing in Detroit. Doesn't want to play in a terrible team in a cold weather city. That's what he said.
Yeah, he said they had to put me on layaway and, right, and all right. That stuff. No, but he played corner and he was damn good at it, though.
Oh, he was
one of the best. Yeah.
Yeah.
Shador's not in that category.
No, he's not. Well, we won't know because he's probably not going to start for a long, long time. But it's, I mean, if that's the example you have, is that's what, if Deion is still bringing that kind of brashness to it, to this situation and saying, well, hey, you know, you show up for who you want to show up for and let them know that you're going to be a star or whatever for whatever team it is. But if his lack of preparation, it's being reported, Shador's lack of preparation for the interview with the Giants in particular, if that's all true, I mean, are you tanking the interview on purpose or are you just lazy? Because it's one of the two. And if you tank the interview on purpose, because that's an impression a lot of people are walking away with, that word gets out quickly and it spreads quickly, and this is why he wasn't drafted until the fifth round.
All right, let's get back to your open line calls, 248-539-9797. Let's go to Kyle. You're next on 97.1 The Ticket. Hello, Kyle.
Hey, what's going on, fellas? How you guys doing this evening? This afternoon?
All right, good, Kyle.
So my question was, you know, I'm watching them, and I've been watching this series, and I just feel like Kevin Garnett made a statement. You know, when you start playing and get deeper into the playoffs, and this is a young team, you know, that's a whole different level of endurance, you know, being able to get up and down that court. And then the defense level has intensified. And I just think at certain moments, you know, we come out, our engine is roaring, we play hard. But when it's time to really lock in and focus on those key pivotal moments, we lose it. And it's not like our focus isn't always there, but it's like we don't have the energy to keep up with these guys. And I just, you know, that's my question. Like, what do you guys think about that?
I don't know. I have no idea if they don't have the energy. I guess I've never heard that or noticed it or think about it. I do think that there is a certain type of experience winning in the playoffs, and I think we're kind of seeing it, and I'm not sure that they have it. And it's frustrating. Right. Fully in the future, Kyle, I swear I can hear Cade Cunningham talking about how much the Knicks series helped him. That's a future version of Cade Cunningham I expect to see.
And one more question. What did you guys think? You made a comment last week about us being able to have more than just two stars show up at one time. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes it's Cade and Durant. Sometimes it's maybe Cade and Tobias. I think yesterday we kind of got, you know, we got over 10 from about four different players yesterday. Maybe 15 from about three or four different players yesterday. Did you guys think that we kind of, you know, the offensive output was there, but it was just maybe, you know, something else that was missing?
Well, I mean, I don't know that the offensive output was there. They turned it over way too much. They were stuck in the 20s for much of the second quarter. They definitely got it going in the second half. Without question, they started to look like themselves in the second half. If I'm going to try and build a winning game plan going into the next game, it's going to be based on the Pistons outscoring the Knicks in the second half of that game, 50-44, I guess it was. They doubled them up in the third quarter, 28-14.
And then got outscored by 8 points in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, well, no, they didn't.
Well, at least eight, at the most.
If Hardaway misses all three free throws.
Right.
Let's go to James in Detroit. You're on 97 on the ticket. Hi, James.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Hey.
Hey, just to echo what the previous caller was saying about Cade Cunningham, Cade, all he got to do basically is make quicker decisions to get rid of the ball so when he get trapped, because like you say, he is a superstar of our team. But basically the problem is when Ivy comes back from his injury, be it next year, they'll be a better team. They'll be all right because he's the one that actually need to control the ball, and that way the pressure be off Cade. But the Pistons done a phenomenal job this year. They're a good team. For them to come from 14 wins up to 43 wins, they've done a good job. And if they can possibly get past the Knicks in this first round, it's going to be hard. You win three straight. But right now, my hat's off to them. They're going to be all right when that guard comes back. What do you think?
It could be. You know, it'll be intriguing to see. I think that's one of the challenges is integrating Ivy back into the regular rotation. You hope they're going to be better. It's a weird thing that happened at the beginning of the year when he got hurt and they started playing better.
Because they were playing well, and then he got hurt.
And I don't think he's disruptive. He seems like a team guy. It seems like it will only help them. I mean, let's face it. Two of the regulars are Isaiah Stewart and Jaden Ivey, and they're not in this series. And you know, it's unfortunate because I, especially in the case of Stewart, I think back to the frustration of Karl Anthony Towns, who has been incredible. Okay, what he did at the end of the game yesterday was incredible. Give him credit. I really wish they had Isaiah. They don't. They haven't. Isaiah Stewart matching up on him would be the preferred matchup because they haven't slowed down Cat. And some of the shots he hit yesterday, I mean, like they guard him out to the arc and he's like, yeah, I'll just back up another 5 feet. Okay, I'll back up another 5 feet. The last three he made was ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, it was like, what, 30 feet? Yeah, I mean,
Steph Curry, and you just don't expect that out of a 7-footer who's that, like, he doesn't, it's a set shot.
It's incredible. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, just a whole different ball game that he provides, and he's answering questions, too. People were questioning his toughness and whether or not he can handle the rigors of playoff basketball, and would he be a guy that can step up? And he has stepped up. He's been great for him. He's been a definite difference maker.
Carson Anderson, 97.1, the ticket. All right. Lions in the draft. Interesting feedback. Here are some texts we got. Text. Brad is decisive. I applaud him for going after the guys they have identified as fits and coachable. Most talented is secondary for this front office. To date, it has worked so far, aside from a couple like Broderick Martin. Okay. Next text. It almost seems like Brad intentionally didn't pick any touted edge rushers out of stubbornness.
I can't disagree with that statement.
Oh, I disagree with it. There's no way in hell that he didn't do it.
It seems.
But if you want to make a case that Brad is doing it out of stubbornness,
you can make a case.
It's not true, of course.
No, I think he knows what he's doing with building this team, and he's built a monster. Won 15 games last year, mm-hmm. despite losing all these players on defense to injuries throughout various points of the season. I think it, you know, really what it comes down to is they expect these guys to get back healthy and compete again for another big season. Can they stay healthy? That's the thing they have to do. They've got to keep these guys healthy. In the meantime, what do you do? Fortifying defensive tackle with Taliq Williams. Is that a position of need? Yep. Is that a pretty good player to get? Yep. Did they add some offensive linemen to try to rebuild for the future and compete at guard? You betcha. They got two really good guards in this draft. That's impressive. To go and did they reach to get Isaac Tesla? Probably reach to get him. But I think that the logic behind what Brad Holmes did in trading up to get him was that at this point, they've already built this team up really well. Now they're just getting the players they want. So if it means that they give up future draft capital, it's okay because they're not looking to have a 10-person draft class anymore. They're looking to have the most potent draft class that they can, and they want to take the big guy, 6'4", 210 pounds, who runs really well and catches everything that's thrown to him, and just go get him, get that guy. They brought him in for an interview. They liked him. They had, you know, had the personal workout. I don't know if it's necessarily a position of need, but it's a player they like. And that goes to Brad's thing about, I don't care about position. I don't care about need. We just want football players. They got themselves a football player.
248-539-9797. Ken, you're on 97 on the ticket. Hi, Ken.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I get to do champ and chump. I've never done that.
Let's go.
Let's see. Champ is in Brad We Trust. Okay. So, going for all the Lions picks, I have no reason to doubt him. I don't know any more about football than he does, so go Brad. And then my chump is the reason I called Mr. Sanders. I followed him quite a bit more this year after last year, you know, how well they did. And I saw a bunch of interviews, maybe half a dozen with him, and I swear, this draft, I don't know how anybody wasn't surprised, but if you watched any of his interviews, it was a classic case of, don't you know who I am? I mean, his attitude, humility, I don't even think is a word that he could even say, because he totally, I'm sure, was like, well, my dad, and the fact that he didn't even have a, I found out, you guys said he didn't have an agent. it was totally like I'm going off my dad's name or whatever. And that's great for college and high school, and I'm sure he was coddled and, you know, you're great and you're this and you're that. And then he got to the draft, and guess what? You know, it's like being 21 and going off to school. Got to put your big boy pants on. And
well, I wonder what it's going to be like when he has a chance to talk with the media in front of cameras and microphones, what he says about the experience. Did he learn anything? Does he want to dispel anything? Is he going to be humble? You know, I think it's one thing to be flashy in front of the cameras and the media and say some brash things. But if you're doing the same thing behind the scenes with the coaching staff, that's the time where you tone things down and you just lock into being, okay, here's the player I am. Yes, I'm confident in what I can do, but let's get to work and do this and that.
I would just say that if I were advising him, it would be turn down a bunch of media requests, keep your mouth shut, and if you do end up at a podium, just say, it was a humbling experience. I'm out to change the narrative about my career, but I will be behind the scenes working hard. Nobody's going to work harder to help this organization, and hopefully I can help in some way. And that's all I have to say. I would be quiet, humble, stress that I'm trying to help the team, and that is it. This is my job to help this team. And if that's being a backup, that's being a backup. But, you know, he probably will get in front of the cameras, and I hope for his sake he's humble. I don't think the Lions were a Super Bowl team before the free agency and draft, and I don't think they are now. Malpractice. It's from an unnamed texter. So why weren't they a Super Bowl? I mean, technically, I guess if you didn't make it to the Super Bowl, you're not. But do you think that they are a Super Bowl contender? Are they a Super Bowl contending team? Because I don't know how you could argue they aren't and weren't.
Well, it was tough to be that going into the playoffs because of the injuries that they had. And yet made a valiant effort, fell way short against the Commanders.
Mm-hmm.
Injuries mounted, and the quarterback didn't have a good game.
Nope.
Quarterback had a horrible game. But the regular season, going 15-2, with the roster that they had halfway through the season, when you lose your top edge rusher, who's one of the best in the game, and then a couple games later you lose Aleem McNeil, and all the other players they lost, which are just, it feels like it's countless. There's like 10 guys they lost during the course of the year to injury. And even into the playoffs, in the second play, the second defensive snap, you lose Amik Robertson, who is playing on the outside because Carlton Davis was out.
Yep.
I don't know what to tell you, man. I mean, that was a ballsy effort by that Lions team that epitomized the word grit the entire way because of what they were playing without. Next man up mentality. It struck a chord with these guys, and they went out and won 15 games. Do I expect them to win 15 this year? No. I didn't expect them to win 15 last year. 15's a big, big, big total. But if this team can stay healthy, even before what you drafted, this team should be a contending team.
248-539-9797. I like Zadarius as a Lion, but I think he only gives about 5 to 6 good snaps a game. That's from Steve in Ann Arbor.
Here's what I want to see, Steve. I want to see what he looks like. If they sign Zadarius Smith, if they come to Common Ground and say, okay, we can only pay you this much. Do you want it? And he says, yes, okay, I'll take it at this point. I want to see what Zadarius Smith looks like on the field at the same time with Aiden Hutchinson.
Yeah.
And perhaps with a healthy Marcus Davenport as well, for as long as he can stay healthy, because he is productive when he plays, but he just hasn't been able to stay healthy. But that's what I want to see. I want to see the opposite defensive end from Aiden Hutchinson, what they look like on the field while Aiden is there. Because all the attention is going to be paid to big number 97.
I think we can kind of get a sense of who that was, because he did play half the season opposite of Myles Garrett, and he was just about as productive. I would have hoped that the numbers had gone up, but he played 9 games there. He had 5 sacks playing opposite of Myles Garrett. Now extrapolate that over a whole season. I mean, it basically got roughly the same pace in 8 games in Detroit. He had 4 sacks. So I'm not sure it's going to be any different, but if you start thinking about if opposite of your elite edge rusher, you have a player that's giving you 9 sacks, that's not the end of the world.
Well, he had 23 tackles.
That's pretty decent.
He had 23 tackles with Cleveland.
And sacks aren't the be-all, end-all. They're big. They're a big part of the measurement of your rushing, but I mean pressures, run support.
But he had 12 with the Lions.
12 what?
12 tackles total with the Lions. He had 23 total with Cleveland last season. He played 9 games with Cleveland, 8 with Detroit. So he was, I mean, the sack total is different, or is it right about the same anyway?
Yep.
But he made more of an impact tackling with Cleveland than he did with Detroit while playing with Myles Garrett. So you now play him with Aiden Hutchinson for a full season. Would you expect him to be more of a force making tackles?
Yes and no. I would, in that it would help. I also, Gator, we're hanging another year on him, so. You know how this works.
This is true.
Before the season last year, I think a lot of people had the Lions going to the Super Bowl, if not winning it, right?
Yep.
This is the same group going into last season as far as the defensive front four. Yes. You know, so why would it change that much? But you know why it did? They saw what happened when those guys aren't around, when they do get hurt. And that playoff game is still resonates with a lot of people where the defense, you know, obviously Goff had a bunch of turnovers and things like that, but the defense wasn't stopping Jaden Daniels either at all. And so throwing the Hutch injury right. And people are kind of a little panicked that, hey, that Brad didn't do anything with the defensive end spot.
Well, in the draft.
Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
Well, also free agency. I mean, who did they bring in? They didn't do anything.
Right. I'm just saying that I wanted to make, because he did the trade deadline he did last year.
Yeah, but I'm
but
talking,
you're talking like, after,
in this offseason,
yeah.
In this offseason, yes. They've added a 6th-round pick.
Yep.
Who has, I mean, he's got a track record of being a guy who just hassles quarterbacks for 2 years at Boise State.
And he had some good games against their better opponents, which I like to do. Okay, how did he, I mean, against Penn State in the playoff game, he had, I think it was a sack and 2 more TFL, 6 tackles total, which is good against a big-time playoff team. But for a second there, just brief second, did anyone else go, wait, Savannah State? When you heard the name, I thought of our guy from Savannah State.
I don't remember our guy from Savannah State.
Elwani El-Shafi. Do you not remember him?
Hey, the guy that called in 7 years ago or whatever?
Yes. For a brief second, I'm like, wait, what? No, it wasn't him.
No, because I thought he had long left college football.
Yeah, well,
that's why.
I knew I was wrong, but I was like, wait, what? Our guy? It's Carson Anderson, 97.1, The Ticket. All right, that's what it sounded like Friday. Well, mostly Friday. Kang on the air earlier in the day. The actual pick. He called it, and then Scott Anderson, the oh my God, from when he called the first round pick on Thursday night during our draft cast. It was a hell of a pick, Kang. Well done. Although people think like they want lottery numbers from you and all that.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Well, that's not the same.
No, that's not the same thing. He's not even like a football guru, although you know your stuff. What you are is a Brad Holmes guru. You are good at reading Brad Holmes' decision making.
And we also threw out the name Tate Ratledge. So I feel like Kang's on, you are on some kind of heater, man.
You guys have always wanted to be that fly on the wall.
Yeah.
I am that fly. I am that fly.
Kang's a fly, there people.
That's right. Be homie. We're on the same page, me and him. Yeah. Tesla, though, honestly, local kid, great story. Big, strong, right? RAS score, very good.
Yep.
Plays special teams, likes to block as a receiver. We mentioned earlier, hey, man, Amon-Ra St. Brown, then JMO on 2 years. They had 1 year contracts behind him. So wide receiver was kind of a need here.
You know what's funny about it is I almost feel like the Lions overemphasize certain things and it works for them. I think that's almost like they'd rather have a wide receiver that's an elite blocker than elite pass catcher. Like, they love that stuff. They love it. And it's worked well for them. It's
Gator,
worked well.
Gator, what did you think when you heard the pick?
Of Tesla?
Yeah, Tesla.
I was a little stunned. First, because isn't that what Kang just... Like, did he say that?
Did that bastard do it again?
Thanks, God.
Kind of nuts. But really, I was stunned because of what they gave up to move up to take him. I'm like, they don't have to give up anything. They can get this guy if they want him now in the third round, or if they wanted to wait later. I felt like this is a guy they could have later. But there was a sense of urgency. Brad Holmes doesn't care about the picks at this point. Just move up, get his guys, and he got his guys. I like the player. I like the makeup of the player. The fact that he's, you know, from the state of Michigan is kind of cool. The story going from Hillsdale to Arkansas is cool, and he's got good size, decent speed, and catches the ball more with his hands than his body. You like to hear that stuff. And really what Brad Holmes had to say about him yesterday or the day before, it was kind of damning of Arkansas in the way that they used him or didn't use him. It was like, you know, he wasn't targeted that much, but every time they did, this guy's making plays.
You know what's funny is we will never hear the complaint again that the Lions don't mind Hillsdale and Egypt.
Right. Yeah.
We'll never hear that complaint again.
That was odd, to say the least. That was odd. But, you know, when you look at the players that the Lions drafted, that still fits the same categories that they're always looking for, the same criteria that they're looking for. They want guys to love football. They got a guy in Hassanen who is somebody who said he would die for Dan Campbell. I mean, that's what you want. Then yeah. They take...
Actually, I don't want anyone to die.
Well, no, but I mean, okay. That's the kind of the attitude that you like to hear. And they've got other guys that were, you know, multiple-year captains with other teams. And the safety they took from Georgia is... you know, going to be a special teams guy. Then that's what they're looking for. They need guys that they can elevate the special teams game, because special teams pretty big deal, actually can make the difference in the game and try to fortify that position or that area of the field. I mean, you can understand most of the picks they made, the trading up to get it. You know, did they pass on other players that I'm sure they passed on players that people like and would have liked to have seen.
You mean fans?
Yes.
Yeah.
Without question. And not addressing the edge rusher until the sixth round, that's going to be one that fans are going to be pointing a finger at. You will be watching to see what Mike Green's career holds for him. You know, if you were going to move up to 57, I'm like, are they going to take Mike Green here? Nope. It took Tate Ratledge, who's I think is going to be a really good player for this team in the future.
In some ways, I almost feel like watching the reaction, I think the Tate Ratledge pick might be their most popular pick. They have done the least sexy thing you can do, which is bolster the interior of your lines. If you get an edge rusher, that's kind of a sexy pick. You get an offensive tackle, a bookend tackle, that's sexier than interior offensive line. It creates more juice. Anybody that's going to have the football in their hands, any other offensive position is more exciting than interior offensive line. Defensively, sometimes, you know, a middle linebacker, although those guys put up big numbers, defensive tackles don't. Where they get high marks is the least sexy, exciting, buzz-creating picks of all. Yet, these feel like the kind of picks that become the foundation of being a great football team. They now have multiple young guards competing for that next wave of offensive linemen. And I would imagine Graham Glasgow is going, not so fast, my friend. I'm not giving up my job without a battle.
Well, lights a fire under him, too. So you've got, I mean, real competition there with Mahogany and now the two rookies. And as you said, Glasgow. And, you know, are one of these guys going to be groomed to be the next center for this team when Frank Ragnow decides that he's going to walk away? Perhaps, mm-hmm. You know, it allows Giovanni Manu to play more tackle and not have to worry about getting reps at guard. Kobe Sorsdahl, what's his future with his team? And then there's lots to look at with what they've got on the offensive line and reserves.
248-539-9797. Phone calls, feedback. Also from the draft, the people that wanted an edge rusher, I mean, am I shocked that in a year that has a deep and what looks like a very a bunch of edge rushers worth investigating, am I shocked that they didn't take one? I guess nothing should shock me as it pertains to Brad Holmes in the draft. I am more than a little surprised. When they were on the clock in the first round, there were a lot of guys. Donovan Ezra-Rocket was there. Mike Green was there. Nick Scorton was there. JT Tuumalo was there. In the second round, Mike Green was still there. Landon Jackson was there. Jackson was available in the third round. Princely Amanmi Ellen, Josiah Stewart, Jordan Birch from Oregon. There were a lot of guys that got very high. They looked at many of them had flaws, okay? Yes. Understandably so. That's why they were not top end of the first round picks. And they didn't bite on any of them. And I'll go back to what we always say is that Brad Holmes is true to himself, true to what they believe. And when I think they get away, the truth is, I don't think they draft for need, but I do think they trade to get the highest rated player in a dwindling pool of players at a position of need. When they say, okay, that might be like, they must, I would love to see their wide receiver board. And I would love to see their edge rusher board, because they took the 25th edge rusher that went in this draft. How much higher did they have Tesla and the edge rusher ranked?
I want to know about Tyreek Williams.
Do you?
Yeah, because if they're doing all this maneuvering in the draft to move up to take Tate Radledge, move up to take Isaac Tesla, couldn't they have used some of that draft capital and moved from 28 to 20 or whatever they could have? Like, that's why I want to see where the defensive tackles rated, because of, you know, who went ahead of them. Obviously, you know, the big four went and the Lions got Tyreek Williams as being the fifth defensive tackle taken in the draft. But where do they have him rated with Kenneth Grant, rated with Derek Harmon, rated with Walter Nolan?
Well, remember the quote about the most instinctual, there was one other defensive tackle they thought was as instinctive, which is funny because, I mean, that doesn't mean he was the second defensive tackle. It just means there were two that they thought played with great instincts. Tyreek Williams was one of them. The other thing I'll say about Tyreek Williams, for those of you who want more of a pass rush, don't forget that this guy could absolutely impact the pass rush in a very positive way. When a defensive tackle collapses the pocket and makes it harder for a quarterback to climb up in the pocket, to step up in the pocket, they've got nowhere to go, right? You got your edge rusher coming off the edge, and that's Aiden Hutchinson. Then you got somebody else that's got to hold their own and provide no escape route. And then you got a collapsing pocket from the inside if Tyreek Williams lives up to their billing, excuse me. This could be a very effective draft pick in terms of helping out the pass rush. I don't know if he's going to do it from day one. That's a tough position to break in. I think he's going to get every opportunity, though, with a Lee McNeil out.
Yeah, he should. He'll get opportunities to be in that rotation right away. But look at Ohio State, what they did last year, you know, because that's a pretty good defensive football team, national championship team. JT Tuimoloau led the team with 12.5 sacks. Jack Sawyer had 9 sacks. That's coming from your edge. Cody Simon, a linebacker, had 7. Then the safety had 6. Then to get down to Tyreek Williams, a couple more players down at 2.5. So he's already, he was playing on a pretty good defensive team. Did those guys benefit from him being in the middle?
Sure.
I'm sure they did. The numbers aren't like crazy great numbers, but when you start looking at those, adding those numbers up, you're like, wow, that's a lot of sacks distributed between the first 5 or 6 players on that team. They had a good pass rush at Ohio State, 53 sacks total.
It's funny. I think a past version of me would have been more questioning this draft. But after watching Brad Holmes cook all these years, I'm like, okay, I don't get it, but that's fine. The way he's drafted. Let's see what this turns into, which, you know, I trust that these picks will be good when it's all said and done, because so frequently in the past, he's done exactly that. He's nailed draft picks. Hey, Michigan Auto Law, auto accident attorneys. They have the service and professionalism that makes them the kind of place that I would recommend to friends and family if I ever know someone who's in need of a lawyer for a car or truck accident. And big part of that is they specialize in auto and truck accidents. Many law firms don't specialize, but focus on many different areas of the law. I met Steve, who runs the place. Good dude. Hung out with him a couple times. Knows what he's talking about. So if you're looking for somebody you can trust, I would trust Steve at Michigan Auto Law, the law firm that puts people over everything. Visit autolaw.com. That's autolaw.com. I got to tell a story on the air. I just told this to Gator off the air. My nephew, my champ of the weekend, Logan Evans, who has made his way through college baseball and through the minors and got called up to the Mariners yesterday and started and got the win. Before the game, he met with the media, and they asked him, had he ever been with to T-Mobile Park where the Mariners play? And he said, no, but I've played here on MLB The Show. He's like, it's really cool. It's way cooler here. And they're like, yeah. And they said, so when you always play with the Mariners? He goes, yeah. And they said, have you created your own player? And he said, yeah. They said, is it Logan Evans? And he said, yep. And they said, are you a pitcher? And he said, no, I'm a switch hitting shortstop. So he created himself in the game.
Right, right.
Put himself on the Mariners, but in that version, he's a switch hitting shortstop, like not it. A pitcher. But congratulations to my champ of the weekend, who Logan Gilbert got hurt. He got called up.
Trading Logan's, huh?
Yeah. Hopefully he gets to stay for a while, and maybe he never goes back to the minors. Who knows? But we're certainly rooting for him and fired up for my nephew Logan. 248-539-9797. Lions draft is in the books. It kind of got overshadowed today. Believe it or not, an NFL draft got overshadowed by a Piston game. Gator, Tate Ratledge is more than just a great haircut. Although his haircut is epic, he's a big-time road-grading run blocker. There's a need there, and I love the young competition that's being created in the interior of the offensive line. I mean, is somebody going to be repurposed as a center between Ratledge, Mahogany, and the kid they got out of LSU in the fifth round, Miles Frazier? There were mocks where we saw Miles Frazier available in the second round. Now, does that mean he's a second-round talent? I mean, it could. You never know where everybody had him graded. It does feel like that's an awfully good place to get the guy. I don't know if you saw this. We haven't talked about Dan Jackson, the safety they took out of Georgia.
They took everybody from Georgia.
Yeah, the Dan Jackson kid, his highlight tape, he killed people. There's video of him like total beheadings. He was a vicious hitter.
Yes, I don't know if they showed the low lights where he's trying to do the same thing and just miss the tackle.
Yeah,
but that's the knock on him, is that he's got a lot of missed tackles as well. But plays downhill, and those are types of players that they love.
Mm-hmm.
That play with their hair on fire type guys.
Yep.
So,
I mean, he's probably a special teams kind of guy. And look, there's no guarantees when you get into the seventh round that these guys are even going to make the team. Hell, the sixth rounder might not make the team, but I would imagine that they took him for a reason. Ahmed Hussainian from Boise State. But now what's next? I mean, are they going to get another edge rusher? I feel like Brad's getting sick of answering the question, but it's valid. Everybody thinks it's Za'Darius Smith. Is Matthew Judon still out there?
Yep. So is Von Miller.
I mean, these feel like for the right price.
I think that's what they're going to do. They're going to end up for the right price. They're going to end up with Za'Darius Smith. Now, they may not. But getting back to the guys that did draft, Tate Ratledge, other things that you got to like about this guy, mm-hmm. He was two-time first-team All-SEC the last 2 years. He was penalized three times over the last two seasons, two holding calls and a false start. That's it. Three times in the last two seasons. Things that I'm just reading part of his bio here. His coaches rave about his practice habits and love for football. Mean dude takes it incredibly personally when a quarterback gets hit. Also very personable, connects well in the locker room. These are all the reasons why he's a perfect fit for the Lions. And when they asked Brad Holmes, Dan Miller did an interview with Brad Holmes, asked him about him, and he said, this seems like a guy that's going to fit right into your locker room. He says, oh, he just starts laughing. He says, oh, yeah, he's going to fit in just fine. So I'm looking forward to seeing Tate Ratledge at some point start at guard for the Detroit Lions. Will it happen in the first season? I don't know, but he's gonna compete for it. I mean, they got one job that's wide open, right?
Yep.
And the other one seems like it's Glasgow, as it should be, because he's been there.
But question about the way he ended the season, certainly the playoff game.
Hang another year.
Yeah, exactly. It's crazy because one thing I'm growing very accustomed to is when guys get drafted by Detroit, they're seriously and authentically excited. I mean, it's not like I know Tate Ratledge, so maybe I shouldn't say that. But doesn't it feel like you get drafted by Detroit now, people are stoked to come here.
Yeah.
And the way Terry and Arnold announced that pick.
Oh, my God.
Amazing. Amazing.
Do we have that on the system by chance? Because that was savage.
Oh, and how about the foreign? Did you see when the German guy announced the pick?
That was uncomfortable.
It was, but his line in theory was funny.
Mm-hmm.
He said something like, "Can I hear from all the Lions fans?" And there was a little, he goes, "Can I hear from the owners of the Packers?" Which, of course,
because the city owns the team, basically. They have shareholders.
And then it kind of fell what he said next. But what he said next was, "I only expected to hear from Jared Goff," which was this, like, you know, on paper.
Like, yeah, but when you have to pronounce it. I thought he said Pecker fans, you know? I was like, what?
Easy, easy. Yeah. Yeah, what's happening here?
Do we have Terry on?
Yeah.
All right, let's hear it.
People were taking shots at Green Bay all day long, all weekend long. It was
so
awesome.
It just so happened, I later in the draft, I had to listen to a little bit. I had it on ESPN radio. Terrion Arnold was on for a long segment, and he had the host in tears laughing so hard. And then near the end of his appearance, Jalen Milroe got drafted, his old teammate. Yeah. And he could not be more excited. And then he took the headset off and like ran away because he wanted to go find Jalen. They did ask him before he left, you know, you're going to be playing against Jalen Milroe. And what are you going to do when you see him coming around the corner? And he's like, "Oh, I'm going to tackle him." Like, what do you think I'm going to do? Terrion Arnold is such a great personality.
Yep.
And when they asked him about the transition to the league, he goes, "I'll tell you what the transition was. All those flags I got at the beginning of the year." He knows what he did wrong, and he certainly got better as the year went on. So,
without question. I
think he's a fun Detroit Lion. If they ever win it all, that's the guy you want mic'd up during any kind of celebration, if they ever get there.
I can't wait for them to start the season with him so that he can erase all the bad taste in the mouth of the Lions fans that hold him personally responsible.
Yep.
First, when he was getting the penalties early on in the year last year, and then they don't recognize it. He calmed that way the F down the second half of the season. He wasn't getting called for penalties.
Yep.
So we'll see.
Rico Beard has made his way in studio and joins us now. Hello, Rico.
Talking about Terrion Arnold.
Yeah.
Arnold?
Yeah.
Or Rakestraw. Well, he didn't play.
No.
I'm just kidding. What's going on, fellas?
It's an observation from Rico. Observation of the day.
What's going on? Well, it's busy day, man. Busy day.
I know. You guys talk any Tigers?
No.
I don't think we mentioned them at all.
Well, we did a little bit. I mean, Javi Baez is my champ of the week. Did mention that they're 18-10, best record in the American League. What's that?
Javier Baez. You know, funny, maybe it sticks.
Whatever
works. He did that, and all of a sudden, he's like, okay, you know what? He's no longer Javi or Harvey. He's Javier.
That maybe that works. What do you guys?
Pistons.
Yeah.
Basically, yes, bad call. I'll admit the bad call. NBA should have done something, but can you admit this?
Well, those guys are on deck. It's going to be an interesting couple days. And, of course, game 5 tomorrow night. It is Carson Anderson here on 97.1. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. Treat each other with respect. 97.1.